One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
Sam, taking you to jungle lands. Bengals pride, it fills the air. Every week we're always there. Touchdowns, tackles, all the plays. Bengals roar in every way. Stories, news, and game recaps. Jungle juice, we bridge those gaps. Welcome to the Jungle Juice. Nick and Sam, let's break it loose. Cincinnati, hear our call. Bengals fans, unite us all.
Welcome in to the latest edition of the Jungle Juice podcast. I'm Sam Gormley. He's Mick Nelson. Mick, are you staying warm?
Yeah. It's been pretty brutal out for the past couple
Do
days.
Do you still have snow on the ground?
Yeah, it's like turned into like it's compacted so much that it's basically ice.
Oh, that's the best. Yeah, no, we still have it. It's like in specific spots, so it's hilarious. Like my quote unquote driveway is gravel, but it's really just like a pull in, and half of it is still covered in snow, and half of it where all the cars have been parked is completely like gravel based. So it's just kind of funny. I'm ready for it to be done with, and I hope it never comes ever again. I'm that kind of old where I'm fine if it never snows again, and I guess that works, right? I mean, that might just be me being old though, but today's also two very important anniversaries. We can start that off right off the bat. I don't know if you know, but on this date 3 years ago and on this date 2 years ago were two huge moments in Cincinnati Bengals history. And 3 years ago today, the drought ended. The Cincinnati Bengals defeated the Las Vegas. They were Las Vegas then. Yes, the Las Vegas Raiders on the last second interception by Jermaine Pratt to win their first playoff game in 31 years. And I don't know about you, but at least once every month or two, I'll go back and I'll watch the final like 3 minutes of that game over and over again. And today I did again.
It was a great time. It was a really great time. That's especially with all the which one are we talking? Are you talking about the Raiders game or the
Humboldt? We're talking Raiders first.
Yeah, okay. Especially when dealing with the times when we've been so close to getting that playoff win, especially in 2015. And I mean that was last time you and I were at a playoff game for sure. That was the last time the Bengals were in a playoff game prior to the Raiders game. And it was the best feeling. I don't think anything can top it.
Super Bowl. That's the only thing I think that would be able to top that. Because like I've even thought about that entire playoff run. You know, the win against the Titans, the win against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. And I think you're in the same boat for me as me in this, in the fact that it was, I was more just numb, and whatever happened from then on out, I was okay. Like, if they would have lost the Titans, I would have been like, okay, that's fine. Like, we finally have the curse has been broken. We're done with that. And then if they would have lost the Chiefs, it would have been like, okay, they had no business beating the Chiefs. The Chiefs were the heavy favorites. It was at Arrowhead. Nobody wins at Arrowhead. Nobody beats Patrick Mahomes except Tom Brady. And then when they did that, it was like, oh, what? Wait, what? Super Bowl?
And still. Nearly magical. It was such a magical it's such a magical postseason. I mean, hell, you got another really good one the year after that in 2020, in the 2022 regular season and 2023 postseason. Hubbard Yardash, I guess we'll go ahead and transition to that.
Was on this date 2 years ago today. Was the Hubbard Yardash, the fumble in the jungle. I like Hubbard Yardash for that.
I like Hubbard Yardash too.
Even though it wasn't technically 100 yards, I think it was only 98, but a Hubbard Yardash, I think, kind of fits with it. And
the greatest that was play in Paycor Stadium history.
Without question. I think it is the biggest single play in the history of that stadium. That was, because I mean, and if you remember in that game, they almost lost it at the end because they ended, that was the deciding touchdown, but the Ravens were driving down the field and Tyler Huntley like threw the ball into the end zone on a last second heave, and the receiver was wide open. I don't even remember who the receiver was. Mm-hmm. And it just barely missed him in what would have tied the game. And you got to think the Ravens probably in that scenario would have gone for two with a backup quarterback on the road. But just an unbelievable run. Two unbelievable. I mean, the two best moments in Paycor Stadium history both happened on this
like
date.
Holiday at it this is. Point. Yeah. January 15th.
And so it was, wild. So I guess that to me is the reason why the Bengals haven't made the playoffs the last 2 years, because they can't play a game on January 15th. So they just know that they have to wait until that comes back up, because that's the only time good things are allowed to happen to us. For
so the next time we'll play in a playoff game is in 20 is for the it'll be the
2027
season, 2028 postseason.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, because it is well. Yeah, I guess unless they somehow add like a Friday game or something, which
we're in for a rough few years here, Sam. January 15th.
Only comes around every so often when it comes to playoff games, unless they change the schedule around or something, which you can never really tell with the NFL. So there we go. We had to start it off with two very fun anniversaries. Great way to open us up. We thank everyone for joining us today. Follow us on our social media channels, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're also on your favorite podcasting platform. Give us a 5-star rating there and subscribe so you get notified whenever we go live. Let's set up some of the headlines before we jump into, because on today's show, it's all about the offense, which is a very positive show for the most part, because there were a lot of positive things that came from the offense. Not all positive. There were some negatives, and even some negatives of some things that you might not necessarily classify or think that we could take negatives on. There are still some negatives for us to discuss as the show goes along. But first off, let's hit a couple of news headlines. First off, defensive coordinator search for the Cincinnati Bengals to replace Lou Anarumo has been very quiet. Yesterday, it came out about lunchtime that Wink Martindale might be a candidate. And immediately, I think back to the game in, I guess it was that 2021 season, where Wink Martindale, before the Bengals played the Ravens, said, I don't think we're ready to give Joe Burrow a gold jacket just yet. And then Joe Burrow proceeded to throw for 525 and 4 touchdowns against his defense. And after the game, when they asked, was that in your mind? He winked and he said, maybe. While wearing Krusty the Krab Christmas in a Christmas hat and a Santa hat.
That's not the only controversy he's had with like talking crap about the Bengals. Like, didn't he have something either in 2018 or 2019? I remember that.
I don't remember that.
I think there was something around one of those seasons where he was just talking shit as well. I can't remember exactly, but it's not that the Joe Burrow comment was not the first time that Wink Martindale's.
If he was talking crap about the 2019 Bengals, though, he probably was right. Because that wasn't the crown jewel. But Paul Dainer Jr. came out late yesterday afternoon and said, yeah, that's not happening. He's not a candidate. And I think both of us were like, Yeah, no, thank
God.
Goodness.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank goodness. He's done a good job at Michigan, but I just don't know how you say, hey, Joe Burrow, here's your new defensive coordinator, the guy that was talking a lot of crap about you.
I would, well, even, yeah, or the guy that's just the definition of mediocre defensive coordinator. I mean, the Ravens moved on from him for a reason. He, you know, his defense just wasn't evolving. He was way too blitz heavy. He was leaving leaving defensive backs out on islands, and teams are starting to figure that out.
And I think that would be maybe the last defensive coordinator that the Bengals need, because it's not like they've got a lot of pass rushers and have great corners or something.
We saw Lou blitz pretty heavily when the defensive line was banged up, and I think those were by far the worst weeks of our defense. Particularly early on in the season.
Against the Ravens, so, yeah. It just
gets the Ravens work. Against the Commanders, against the not to get too deep. I mean that is the news right now, is the defensive coordinator search. Now I heard we did hear Matt Eberflus. I don't think we talked about Eberflus being a candidate other than like mentioning him as a possible candidate. But there were reports that came out that they are interested in Matt Eberflus, but
if it came out tomorrow and it was announced that Matt Eberflus will be the new defensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals, I'd be really happy. Like, I think that'd be a slam dunk hire.
Yeah. And I think it would be a good hire. Part of me thinks the reason why it's waiting, why we haven't had any news yet, is that they're probably waiting to interview Al Golden. Probably after Monday, I would assume Al Golden within the next few days would probably be on a flight or some type of, he'd be in Cincinnati, probably interviewing for the job.
Or Zach Taylor will be in South Bend.
Or Zach Taylor, yeah. That's also a possibility. Also, I guess we missed that Dejon Anthony was trolling all the fans and all the media members. But you know, that's something maybe like a proven like starter could do.
Yeah, I feel like Trey Hendrickson can do that.
Yeah, Dejon Anthony, the guy that, and not to give him too much crap for this, but the guy that kind of was one of the reasons why we lost against the Chiefs this year.
I mean, if we're being honest, he doesn't commit that penalty. The Bengals played this past weekend.
Yeah, they probably give the Bills a better game than what the Broncos did. Yeah. Which I'm still kind of surprised that happened. I thought the Broncos would have played so much better. Bills.
I genuinely think the Bengals
would have been a really close game. I think either three of those matchups would have been a really close game that the Bengals play.
Yes, without question on that. Here's the question for you, though. We have our show again 1 week. Do we have a defensive coordinator?
No. 2 weeks, yes.
What about by next weekend?
This upcoming weekend or the weekend
after? Next weekend. So like the Saturday...
Like, I think
conference championship Sunday. Like, by the time the conference championships end, will the Bengals have a defensive coordinator?
If it's Al Golden, like a lot of us think, it's probably going to be Al Golden. I would assume it would be probably towards the latter half of next week. So, yeah, by next weekend, yeah.
I think it'll be really interesting. A couple of the other news headlines for us to update: the Colts get the game in Germany. So at least half of my prediction is incorrect. Madrid is the only option left for international games. Probably is going to be announced next week. They announced the London games last week. They announced the Germany game today. So more than likely, you're assuming that they'll probably announce the game in Spain next week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the Bengals. I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I mean, listen, that'd be really cool. A cool trip going to Madrid. That's definitely at the top of my list of a place I'd like to go. I think there's even direct flights from CVG to Madrid, or there will be for that game. I would assume that they do something like that. So we'll probably have an answer on that by next week if the Bengals will have a home game internationally next season. Joe Burrow was named AFC Offensive Player of the Month for December and January. That was the second consecutive time that he'd won the award. So he won it November, December, and January. So Burrow
somehow only got two AP first team votes.
You led right into my next thing as far as the news. Jamar Chase and Trey Hendrickson were named first team All-Pro. That's it. Joe Burrow, not first or second team.
And big congrats to Ja'Marr Chase and Trey Hendrickson. Both of them had incredible seasons. Ja'Marr Chase, I think, is only the fourth wide receiver in the modern era to win the Triple Crown. It was Shannon Sharpe's brother, Sterling, Cooper Kupp, Steve Smith won it 1 year. And then Ja'Marr Chase. I think those are the modern era Triple Crown winners. So much deserved for the first team All Pro for Ja'Marr Chase. Also, another fun fact. I don't know if you saw this, but so Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase are the first college teammates to have to be the first team All Pro at the wide receiver position since Steve Smith and Chad Johnson when they were on the same community college team.
Really? I was going to say I don't even know that I know where Steve Smith went to college.
I think he went to Utah. I think he went there for undergrad. Actually, I'll look that up, but I'm pretty sure.
I honestly don't know that, but yeah, I do know that they were community college teammates because Chad ended up going to Oregon State and he was there with TJ with that. Hude, Daryl too. We appreciate you joining us to watch here today.
Steve Smith did go to Utah, by the way.
He did go to Utah. Good job on that.
Santa Monica Community College is what the college.
I knew it was Southern California.
Yeah.
Couple of the other headlines, Dane Brugler from The Athletic. He came out with his first like major mock draft of the offseason. I don't know if you've seen it, so I can give you your first reaction here to who he is mocking the Bengals right now. And again, we're 3 months out from the NFL draft. It's interesting. So first round pick, Michael Williams, an edge from Georgia. Interesting. Williams, 5 sacks all season for Georgia. 4 of those, though, came in the 2 games against Texas. What I found interesting is still on the board at that point, Kelvin Banks, who is a offensive tackle from Texas, who many believe is actually probably going to be a guard at the next level, James Pierce, and Ashton Jeanty. Now, Jeanty, I don't think is on the Bengals. Like, I mean, he'll be on the Bengals draft board, but I don't want to say I'd be upset if they draft him, but I can't imagine them drafting Ashton Jeanty. And that's not a slight against Ashton Jeanty at all. It's just not what the Bengals need.
I think Jeanty's probably gone before the Bengals pick. I mean, there's a lot of running back needy teams out there.
Michael Williams over James Pierce, though, kind of surprised me a little bit because I feel like James Pierce would have been the guy beforehand. And we're going to talk a lot about the draft ad nauseum, especially like mid to late March through the end of April. But if Michael Williams was the guy, you would feel...
I wouldn't be against it. I mean, I think there's a... And the reason, you know, it could just be a difference between, you know, people scouting with Dane, what's the last name?
Brugler. Yes.
You know, he might have a higher grade on Michael Williams than he does on James Pierce Jr. You know, this edge rusher class, especially in the first round, is chock full of edge rushers. I mean, you have players like Abdul Carter, James Pierce, Mike Green from Marshall, right now tabbed to be a first round pick.
I don't want that guy anywhere near us.
Dude, that guy had 18 sacks last year. Jalen Walker, that's another name to kind of bring about. I know that he's labeled as an off-ball linebacker, but he's being projected to be an edge rusher in the NFL. That's another guy. I mean, you got players like the Ohio State, both of those guys, Jack Sawyer, JT to, how do you pronounce it? Tuimoloau.
Sure. Yeah, nailed it.
Princely Umon Milan out of Ole Miss. Jared Ivey out of Ole Miss, who's projected to be a day two, but I think he's going to sneak up there in day one potentially as well, especially when the combine results come in. This class is full of edge rushers, like last year's class was full of tackles, especially in the first round.
The second round projection that he had, it was only a first and second round, was Marcus Mbau.
Marcus Mbau, tackle out of Purdue.
Yes, but they're projecting maybe him to be a guard as well when it comes to the NFL. Played right guard as a sophomore at Purdue, played right tackle the last 2 years. Allowed 3 sacks all season, though, with 2 coming against Notre Dame, though. So, if you're going to give up 2 sacks, that's a pretty good team to give up 2 sacks to. The couple of names in the picks after this, Deion Walker, who is a interior defensive lineman from Kentucky, and even Maxwell Hairston, who is a corner from Kentucky, who were like the next two picks in there with that. Brian writes in and says, we should go all offensive line and safety in the draft, nothing else. I think you're going to need some defensive linemen in there as well.
Yeah, have we not talked about how bad the defense was this year?
Yes. You're going to probably need some defensive linemen. You might need a linebacker in there as well. So it'll be kind of interesting. And then the last piece of news that I found, I just found this very interesting, is last week on the show, we went through cap casualties, potential cap casualties. And I don't think you gave a percentage. I think we just kind of gave yes or no. Do we think they'll be back? Should they be cut? And so on. Paul Daner Jr., though, from The Athletic, who knows more than us? No question about that. When it comes to the inner working of the Bengals and what they might decide to do, he gave percentage chances of whether these players will be cut. And I found it interesting. Sheldon Rankins, 100% chance. And I don't think that's any surprise whatsoever. Alex Kappa, he put it a 90% chance. Sam Hubbard, 95% chance. Geno Stone, 45%, which I think is probably about right. I think we both said it's a 50-50 chance, so 45 is in there. Zach Moss, he said a 60%. This is the interesting one. Jermaine Pratt, 80% chance.
Really?
Which I found interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think we both expected him to be back. And from what it sounds like, is at least the way that I am picking up on it, is that I think the act is getting tired is kind of about what Paul Daner had said. Because, I mean, it is. I mean, you know, you can say what you want if you're performing at an elite level. Because then the hijinks don't look as much like hijinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look past a lot of what Chad Johnson did. Now, Chad was never a problem. He just said a lot of things because he was performing. But if Chad was having a season like, I don't know, Andre Yoshivash this year, then the hijinks wouldn't necessarily be as cute.
Yeah, and the season that Chad did have that, I would say it was the 2010 season where T.O. was really the number one wide receiver on the team. And Chad really ended up taking a step back and was talking his game like he usually does. And I think that's where he ended up getting traded to the Patriots in the offseason.
I just found the 80%. And again, Paul knows more than we do. We will admit that completely. I found it interesting. It was the most interesting thing that I've read of his over these last couple of days as far as bringing people back. Let's jump into the Bengals offense to recap them from this season. And I think it's easiest just to go position by position and then talk about it as a whole and kind of where we go from here. So we can start it off with Joe Burrow. I mean, he became only the fourth person in Bengals history to be the only player to attempt a pass in a single season. Okay, Mick, who are the other three?
Andy.
There you go. So you got to think though, because like Andy Dalton, there was the 1 year, was it 2012, where technically he wasn't the only player to attempt a pass because Muhammad Sanu did.
Mm-hmm.
So like that does count. So Andy Dalton is one of them, though. I think it was 2013, I think, was the year that he did that.
Carson?
Yes, 2007. And there's one more on the list.
Kitna.
You're right. John Kitna.
Yay.
John Kitna. So he was the wild card in there with it.
2003, John Kitna.
Joe Burrow is the next one. I mean, he nearly passed for 5,000 yards. Turnover-worthy play percentage, 1.9%. He was just about all that you could ask for.
Yep. Pretty damn good. Big time throw percentage, 5.3%. 37 big time throws, 15 turnover worthy plays, 43 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. We saw some real just highlight reel type of plays from Joe Burrow this year, which you could say that any year that you watch Joe Burrow play. But the Superman touchdown throw, the touchdown he had against the Steelers, pretty much in the same fashion, just not as cool as he had as the one he had against the Browns.
The Titans, where he's just running around, making a play.
we saw the deep ball return this year. We definitely didn't really see that last year. A lot of it had to do with the calf injury. And then, you know, he was going up against really good defenses with the Niners and the Bills and played it lights out in those games, but it wasn't necessarily a deep ball game that we've seen from Joe Burrow, but that was back this year. I mean, not a lot more could be said just about how great of a quarterback he is. And, he'll get an All-Pro one of these days. If the team is 10-7, he's probably on the All-Pro. He's probably a second-team All-Pro.
He's probably the MVP.
I think he's up there. I think it's between him and Lamar still because they both have very similar stat lines. But, yeah.
If we want to be critical towards Burrow, just because I want this to be as honest as we can, the one, and I don't even know how much of a negative is he was credited with 11 fumbles this year, which was the third highest in the NFL, trailing only Baker and Kirk Cousins. Now, how much of that is that he was sacked 48 times and he has a dog crap offensive line, which we're going to talk about here. How much of that is his fault? How much of that is he's trying to extend plays to make something happen, and that's the reason that the fumble was caused? How much of that is he's playing the Steelers twice, he's playing, you know, the Browns twice, you know, good pass rushes, the Ravens twice, and so on? Eagles, I don't know. But if you wanted to have a knock, that probably would be one of the knocks.
Yeah, and we don't know how much of it was, you know, early on in the season, because I feel like more fumbles happened earlier than the season than later in the season. And I could be wrong on that, but just based off of, you know, memory, I think that's what was happening. How much of that could have been he was still somewhat recovering from the wrist injury?
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just the one negative. And then when I was looking into his PFF things, I found this fascinating. And I don't know that this means anything. But his PFF grades. So how PFF does it, if you're looking specifically into the specifics of splitting up the field, it has like 9 pockets. Where you've got deep, I guess it's maybe even 12, where it's deep, intermediate, short, and then behind the line of scrimmage, I think is what it was. I think that, yes, so that it's, so there, and then you have right, middle, and left when you're breaking down as far as where Joe Burrow likes to throw as far as it goes to PFF. So when you look at those, each of those rows, his lowest PFF grade in all of those were the right side. Low on deep right, low on intermediate right, low on short right, and behind the line of scrimmage right were always lowest in each of those three categories. I don't know that there's anything like to read into that. Now, a couple of them were drastic differences, but some of them were very, very close. I just found it interesting. And I don't know that that means anything whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it might determine, or might be of which wide receivers were lined up where on the field. I really don't know off the top of my head, but if Jabbar is primarily lined up on the left side and you didn't have T. Higgins for a good chunk of the season, missed like 5 games this year. If you had, you know, Yoshivash or whoever on the right side, that might explain it. But yeah, that is something noteworthy.
Yeah. And again, it would be one of those things that I would love, like, if I was a beat writer, I'd love to ask him that question in a press conference. And just to see what he would answer, because he's very, and you know, he's very intelligent, and I would love to know why he thinks that, or if it is just a coincidence. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Shout out to Jake Browning. I think he had, what, 2 snaps all season? I think they were both kneel downs. Shout out to Jake. Good job. Did great. Good work. Nothing against Jake Browning, but I like it when we never see him in a game, because yeah, that usually, unless it's a blowout, then it's nice to see him in the game. But it's nice when we don't see Jake Browning out there.
Yeah, and we might not ever see him again.
He might. Yeah, I mean, he's still under contract in next year, but there could be a trade.
Is he?
Yes, he is still under contract.
Oh, I thought next year. This was the last year. No, he was.
They have one more year with him. They have one more year with Jake Browning. Let's move on to the running back position, and I think we got to start with Chase Brown. And to me, the Chase Brown biggest story is that it proves the Bengals made the right decision with Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
I think he proved that they made the right decision. And here is the stat proving that the most. Pass blocking grade. He had a 62.3, which is not great as far as a running back. It's probably, what would you say, very average as far as a running back pass blocking grade.
Yeah, not as bad as Joe Mixon.
Joe Mixon only got a pass blocking grade in his NFL career of 62.3 one time, 2019. The past couple of seasons, it was downright atrocious grades. It was Alex Kappa grades pretty much back there. And that, to me, is the biggest reason as to why Chase Brown was the right decision.
Yeah, I think that there's a few other factors into that as well. I mean, yards after contact, Joe Mixon 100%. Towards the bottom of the league. He was at like a 2.5 yards after contact last year. This year, Chase Brown's right around 3.08 yards after contact. You saw more breakaway runs out of Chase Brown than you've seen out of Joe Mixon in recent years. So you're seeing the explosiveness that you were kind of missing with Joe Mixon. Now, Joe Mixon, just play devil's advocate here. The one area where you were missing Joe Mixon a little bit was the fumbling. I think Chase Brown had, how many fumbles did he have this year?
Two fumbles
this year, which is,
and that was
two
one
more
of those
than what we're used to. Huh? Yeah. Two more than what we're used to seeing, but two still, it's not a bad number. It's not a terrible number.
Here's the point that I circle with that is that he had two bad early fumbles. You know, the one was against the Giants that didn't end up counting as a fumble, but still goes down as a fumble per PFF. And then the other one was the big one against the Ravens that turned the tide of that game. But that Ravens game was what, November the 11th?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't fumble again the rest of the season.
Yeah.
That shows a lot of growth for Chase Brown. And he was getting more touches from November 11th on than the rest of the season. His touches kept going up and up and up as the season went along.
Yeah.
I think it was a really impressive season by Chase Brown. I don't know that you really could ask for much more.
No, you can. And also the receiving numbers are great again for Chase Brown. 54 receptions, 360 yards, 4 touchdowns, had a 77 receiving grade, which will get the job done at the running back position. It's a very good number to have. We saw him more featured. We saw him heavily featured into the pass game. I think with the second stint of T. Higgins' injuries, where you didn't see Gesicki getting as involved during this stretch, where Chase Brown was really receiver number two. I mean, I remember the Baltimore and the Chargers games back to back, 17 targets total, 14 receptions, averaging 7 receptions a game. You do that an entire year, that's a lot of catches. That's over 100 receptions. Now, theoretically, the Bengals don't have T. Higgins out, you know, going forward or whatnot. Or, you know, you have another wide receiver starting in there. But, yeah, I mean, the receiving numbers were great for Chase Brown nonetheless. I think it kind of solves the question of, are we going to be looking for running back in the draft this year? Yeah, maybe you're looking at one in the later rounds because you need to keep the you pretty much need to draft one every other year anyways, just to keep the roster intact. He's playing like a feature back right now. He's playing like an Austin Ekeler right now.
Yeah, I think you took the words right out of my mouth. Freddie writes, since it's 5 years, $35 million, he might take it. I don't know who you're specifically saying, Freddie. I'm curious. Please let us know who you're talking about when you're mentioning that. But I agree. I think you're looking at maybe that sixth round pick being a running back this year.
Yeah.
You know, to go in there and compete to be, whether it's running back two or running back three, because you look at Zach Moss, I think everybody forgets that he was even a thing because he kind of, you know, all of a sudden that injury popped up and next thing you knew he was on IR and it was like, oh, wow. Bye, Zach Moss. See ya.
And when he was in, there's a good chance he's not back next year as well.
When he was in, 3.3 yards per carry. Pass blocking was decent. He actually wasn't bad in the pass game, like as far as receiving wise.
Yeah.
Maybe more so than I think was necessarily expected when he came into Cincinnati, because that was kind of a knock on him, was that he wasn't necessarily the greatest receiving back. But I don't think that was necessarily a knock on him when he was actually healthy. But I don't know that he'll be back. But if he is back, I'm not upset.
Yeah, I mean, if I think it's going to be between them wanting, it's going to be between Khalil Herbert and Zach Moss. Now, I know Khalil Herbert is a free agent after the season, but I can't imagine him demanding a lot of money. And he honestly might be cheaper than Zach Moss this offseason here. The thing with Zach Moss is that, you know, he graded okay receiving, his pass blocking. I mean, that's what we liked out of him when they signed him last year, is that his pass blocking grades were usually really high. You just didn't see the explosiveness out of Zach Moss that we saw in 2023 when he was with the Colts. I mean, yards after contact numbers are absolutely abysmal. 2.12 yards after contact. You saw me, you know, kind of dogging on Joe Mixon's 2.2 and a half yards after contact, which was in the bottom, towards the bottom of the league last year. I mean, this number would have been the bottom in the league by a wide margin. You just didn't see the explosiveness. You didn't see really any breakaway runs out of him. You saw two breakaway runs for 31 yards in his eight games that he played in Cincinnati. It's just, you didn't see what you wanted to see, what you wanted out of Zach Moss. There's no reason for them to really keep him, I think, especially if they can get Herbert for cheaper.
And then draft a undrafted free agent or something, mm-hmm. in the realm of getting another guy in there and hopefully finding the next Chase Brown. Yeah, and I'm not saying the same kind of running back as Chase Brown. I'm more just saying you're trying to find that day three guy that pops up and has a really good year, because that's been the NFL these past couple of years. Some of the best running backs in the NFL each year are day three guys.
Yeah, and if we're looking at a class for them to find a running back to just be a complimentary piece or a depth piece, I mean, this is the year for it. I mean, this draft, I mean, the running back talent is crazy good. And a lot of these guys you can get with a day three pick. I mean, you can look at guys like Woody Marks out of USC, Damian Martinez out of Miami, Bashel Tutin out of Virginia Tech, Kyle Monningai out of Rutgers. I mean, just there's so many of these guys available towards the latter rounds that could be really good depth pieces on this team.
Yeah, no question when it comes to that. Wide receiver, I chuckle when I was looking at this. The highest graded PFF receiver on the Cincinnati Bengals this year. Do you know who it was?
I don't think it was Jamari. It's probably T.
No. Sam Hubbard.
Oh, geez.
Which I just, I find that hilarious. But because if I would have guessed, you know, what would have been the odds on Sam Hubbard? Now, I know he only had, I think, two snaps to technically, and he had the one catch for a touchdown, which helps your PFF grade go up quite a bit. But I just chuckle at Sam Hubbard being the number one PFF receiver. But I think we got to start with Jamar. I think every other season, he would be the hands-down offensive player of the year in the AFC.
He might be the offensive player of the year.
It's going to be him versus Saquon is a fascinating decision. But I think pretty much every other year, he has it hands down and there's no conversation. It's just the fact is that Saquon Barkley was also really freaking good all season. So I'll be interested to see if he actually does that. And I mean, the biggest takeaway for me, too, is that he's going to get paid.
Yeah. He's going to get paid a lot of money, which... You know, we'll have the T discussion later, because I think T is about to get paid a lot of money as well. But yeah, I mean, you can't say enough about how great of a season Jamar Chase had this year. Won the Triple Crown this year in receiving, which I think that's such a rare feat to accomplish. I mean, there's probably triple the amount of 2,000-yard rushers in the modern era of football than there are Triple Crown receivers. And I would assume that, I don't know if Steve Smith did it in 2005, Cooper Kupp won the Triple Crown in 2021 and won AFC Offensive Player of the Year. And then, yeah, I mean, there's just not much more that can be said about Ja'Marr Chase and how great of a year he had. There was just some games where he just absolutely took over.
Ravens.
Raven.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Both Ravens games, Cowboys game.
Yep.
Had a really good game against the Commanders. Now, the one argument I can make against Ja'Marr Chase is that it was kind of streaky. I mean, if you're looking at these, if you're looking at the Ravens game and the Cowboys game in relation to his total yardage, I mean, we're seeing 193 against the Ravens in week 5, 264. So that's 450 yards and 177 against the Cowboys in week 14. So that's 630 yards. I mean, that's over a third of his production in only concentrated in three games. But we did see some games where, I mean, numbers were kind of pedestrian. I mean, I'm seeing 35 yards against the Chiefs in week 2, 55 yards against the Browns in week 7, 54 against the Eagles, 43 against the Raiders. And then, you know, the receiving stat line towards the end of the year was fairly good. I mean, in the 80s, pretty much the entire back half of the season.
If you want to take another knock on Jamar, and it's so hard to take a knock, is that drops this year. He had 10 of them, which when you classify targets in there, it's probably not that bad. But 10 drops is probably not the number that he needs to be at, especially if he is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, if not the best. But that is at least one, if we're trying to be nitpicky, Jamar, and it's hard to be nitpicky when he had as good of a season as he did.
Yeah, it is his second highest drop rate of his career. He only had a 4% drop rate in 2023, 5% in 2022. This year it was up to 7%. 2021 was, he was getting used to the NFL, 9% drop rate. He did lead the league in drops in 2021, but
and still won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, when you're as dynamic as he is, I mean, you can afford to drop a couple passes as long as they don't look comical like that one against the Chargers in his rookie season. I think everything's good.
Like Hubert writes in, though, and says, Jamar's so good, 54 yards is considered a rough game.
It is. Yeah, that's a good point to make there.
And Riley brings up a good point, is how much is it being doubled and triple teamed to, potentially safety over the top when he had bad games, T and Gesicki usually picked up. But like you mentioned... The first bad game that he had in the season was Chiefs. There's no T in that game. So the Chiefs were able to game plan in shutting Jamar down.
Yeah. And
so
it also doesn't help that one of the best corners in the league was matched up against Jamar for the entire game in Trent McDuffie.
Without question. Speaking of T, only played 12 games, but those 12 games were really, really good. The Denver game is an all-timer.
Yeah.
It's an all-timer for performances as a Bengal wide receiver. We mentioned Jamar, 10 drops. He only had 2 all season. He was a vacuum. When the ball was in his area, he was usually pulling it in. A great season for T. Higgins. If you took out those injuries, he would be up there of being in the All-Pro conversation.
He's probably a Pro Bowler, I would say, at least.
Without question,
a Pro Bowler. And I've said this so many times, probably say this one time per episode that we have, but the way that T. Higgins' role is transitioned to him being the security blanket of this offense, pretty much just playing that tight end role, like third and medium, where are you going? You're going to T. Higgins. And it seemed like that's what Joe Burrow was doing every time. He was just, he was incredibly reliable. You mentioned only 2 drops. A 3% drop rate, which compared to last year was so much better because of, I think we often forget how rough of a year he had last year compared to expectations that we had for him, 13% drop rate last year. So you're seeing you saw a remarkable improvement in that. Highest yards per route ran since 2021, 2.05 yards per route ran. 125 passer rating when targeted. That's by far the best passer rating targeted while targeted in his career. He's going to be big. He's going to be paid a lot of money.
2 weeks from today, we're going to have our T. Higgins show. Or it's literally that we're going to just talk about T. Higgins an entire show and break down all aspects of whether the Bengals should re-sign him or they shouldn't. Because there's a lot of different angles to it. And so I don't want to dwell too much on that right now, because in 2 weeks, we're going to go all the way into it. But I'm just fascinated as to how that turns up. Other wide receivers, Andre Yoshibosh. I think he wasn't bad.
I think he played a lot better as the season went along.
Agreed.
Now, the season grading wasn't great, 54.3 receiving grade, but I think that was dragged down by some really pedestrian weeks. And
make sure you read comment on the screen too.
What did I read? T2.
If you know, you know. Sorry.
If you know, you know. I think we saw some good games towards the back half of the season for Yoshibosh. I still think that you could probably have an improvement for the number 3 receiver over Yoshibosh. Like I think I've heard you say this plenty of times. If he's your wide receiver 4, your wide receiver depth chart's in a good place. And I agree with that.
I think the way I say it is he is what fans think Trenton Irwin was.
Yeah, sure.
As far as he is a good wide receiver four. If you need him to go in there and fill in, if T gets hurt and you need him to play a couple games, I think you're okay. But I don't think he's your everyday starter.
Yeah.
And maybe that changes.
Now the drops have to get fixed for Yoshibosh as well. And he only had four drops on the season, but if you're looking at drop rate, he was around 10% this year, which is fairly high. He was at 11% last year. So that's just an area of his game that he really just needs to work on a little bit. But yeah, I mean, he had an okay season. I think the Bengals could definitely improve at that wide receiver three position. If they do re-sign T, I think that they are probably looking for another wide receiver.
Maybe
day two, early day three.
Here we go. Here's a thought. What if we say, let's draft a wide receiver in, you know, I'm just going to pull one out. Let's just say the third round from the SEC, who's got really, really good tape. Really, really good tape. Third round receiver. Might even be like a first or a second round pick. Oh, wait. No, we got that guy on the team already. Jermaine Burton time to talk about him.
Oh. Okay, that's it. I'm not talking about him. God, it's
here's the question. Bengals open up the season against the insert team here. Is Jermaine Burton on the team?
No.
Is Jermaine Burton on the team come start of training camp?
No.
Interesting.
I'm waiting for the news to the news is going to drop at some point that the Bengals are releasing him. He's too much of a problem. Either in the locker room, outside of the locker room, he's just a problem. And you can't afford to have that on your team.
Schubert writes in and says, is Charlie Jones at receiver a complete lost cause?
Oh,
let's go with Charlie Jones. Let's start with Charlie Jones here. Let's come back to Riley for a second. Let's go to Charlie Jones first. Is Charlie Jones at receiver a complete lost cause? I think that's a depth piece.
Yeah, just keep him. Give him the Travion treatment. Give him the Travion Williams treatment. Keep him on the team.
He's just hurt all the time, and it's hard to really judge. But at the same time, your best ability is availability, and he's not been doing that.
He's available on the team for the next 2 years at least.
Let's draft Kyron Lacy while we're at it, says Riley.
Oh, geez. Oh, Kyron Lacy is really the Jermaine Burton of this class, which I'm guessing that I probably should just get him off the draft board.
Yeah, but he's not getting drafted.
His athleticism is so dynamic. His tape is really good. But apparently
What Kyron Lacy has been accused of is nothing like what Jermaine Burton was ever accused of. And Kyron Lacy has been accused of attempted murder. Like, that's
is it hit and run? I thought it was a hit and run. Like,
I think they charged him with attempted murder.
Oh.
Jeez. Yeah, I think that's it. But
Restrepo. Riley's a big Restrepo guy.
I don't know. It is interesting. Let's go on to tight ends here. Mike Gesicki. Really, we should have talked about him probably on wide receivers because he played his way into being wide receiver three a lot of the season. The thing that is fascinating to me about Mike Gesicki is because I think, and you'd probably agree with me, that he had a really good, maybe not really good, he had a good season for the Bengals.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, he had two touchdowns all season, and both of them came in one game. It's just kind of interesting that he was never a target in the red zone.
Yeah, you would think he would be the red zone target, just given his stature and his ability to receive the ball. And even though he didn't have the touchdowns, he was kind of the security blanket when T. Higgins was not on the field, which is what you expect your tight end to be. I mean, this was the second best graded season of Mike Gesicki's career, his best graded season since 2020. When the Dolphins had no receivers and he was really the only guy that that Tua or Ryan Fitzpatrick was throwing to. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you're not bringing back T. Higgins this year, and we'll, like you said, we'll have the T discussion in a couple weeks. Mike Gesicki's got to be towards the top of your re-sign list. And he still should be anyways, even if you do re-sign T. It's not like tight end contracts are that expensive.
And neither will he. And I mean, Schubert was taking the words out of my mouth as well, is that he had the touchdown that was overturned week one against the Patriots.
That was a repressed memory for me.
Speaking of tight ends against the Patriots, we can just make this guy was the next guy on the list. But I mean, Tanner Hudson had one of the worst plays to start the season, where he had maybe the worst fumble I've ever seen. Might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but against the Patriots, and because of that, he was kind of in my doghouse all year. I just don't know that I see him back. But the guy, and you see Riley bring up his name, Eric Hall. Before he got hurt, he had that stretch there of about 5 or 6 games before he got hurt, where he was really playing well.
Yeah,
and he was doing exactly what you thought you were going to get with a 4th-round pick out of tight end U.
Yeah, I think he was a really reliable tight end. Now, I do wish that we saw a little more dynamic play out of him. He was a very sure-handed tight end, caught 20 of his 21 targets. I don't believe he had any drop. Okay, he had one drop. I guess his one incompletion was a drop against the Browns in week 7. But you just saw a sure-handed guy. He always seemed to move the sticks when he caught the ball. A good inline tight end, because you didn't have one in Mike Gesicki. Mike Gesicki was primarily playing in the slot.
Gesicki's a wide receiver. He's a hybrid, I guess is probably the best way to describe him.
He's what we wished Auden Tate would have been.
There's a name. Schubert's gonna love you dropping that name. I think he's Alex Schubert's best favorite Bengal of all time.
I thought it was Thad.
Well, that goes without being said, Mac. I mean, listen, Thad, he's his all-time favorite. Drew Sample. He took a major step back in pass blocking this year. He took a major step back.
Funny to say of a tight end, by the way. Tight ends aren't pass blockers. Okay,
Drew Sample is turned into kind of like Ryan Hewitt. There's a name for you. Remember Ryan Hewitt?
He wore the same. Did he wear the same number? I think he wore the same number as Ryan Hewitt. Maybe
you're right.
Ryan Hewitt wore number 86. I can't remember.
I think maybe he might have been 86 on that. And then Freddie brings up here, what was the deal with Cam Grandy? He had more starts, full starts than catches, I think. I think the thing with Cam Grandy is that he is a good blocker. And also good at false starts.
Yeah.
Good at that too.
His receiving grades weren't bad either. Good run blocking. I think he's the best run blocking tight end on the team.
He took the Eric All role, because apparently Tanner McLaughlin, I was listening to Paul Daner talk, really they were disappointed in him. It sounds like when it comes to practice and so on, he just really didn't do what they thought he was going to do. So because that, Cam Grandy, an undrafted guy, kind of flipped in there and took that spot.
I had a 74 receiving grade. It's pretty good receiving grade. Caught all 5 targets for 28 yards.
Yeah, including having the first catch of the Broncos game, because we all had that on our bingo card.
Yeah.
And I think it was a designed play to Cam Grandy, too. I was rewatching some of that game it was over the weekend. And it was, once the Bills got up by like 70 in that game, I watched a little bit of the Broncos game to make myself feel better. It didn't necessarily work, though. Let's talk about the offensive line. I'm fascinated by what this offensive line looks like next year, because I think you've got 3 starters set for next year. You've got your left tackle, you've got your center, and you've got your right tackle. I think those are, for the barring injury, are locked in to be your starters week one next season.
Yeah.
But you've got 2 massive holes at guard. Alex Kappa was awful this season. He was awful. And is it injuries? Is it age? Regardless, He was putrid. Cordell Volson wasn't much better, but he was, I guess, a little bit better. I guess Alex is dropping a Seathan Carter mention here. Where do you see this offensive line next year?
I mean, you probably are looking at replacing at least one of those two interior offensive linemen. I mean, I still hold out some hope for Alex Kappa, even though the past 2 years have been not ideal. I mean, it also seemed like he was playing really well to start the season. I mean, you're looking at pass blocking grades first 4 weeks of the season, 67, 73, 70, 78. And then the Ravens game happens and it's all downhill from here. Now, how much of it is
Mims?
Yeah.
As soon as the Mims change.
Yeah. How much of it does have to do with the Mims change? Was Alex Kappa trying to take on too much? Or did it have to do with the Bengals playing cupcake defenses for the first 4 weeks of the season? I mean, you're playing against the Patriots, Commanders, and Panthers. All three of those defenses, I think, are on the bottom quartile of the league.
Look at you with a big word over there.
I know.
Wow.
You saw some really putrid games out of them. And, you know, does some of it correlate to playing against elite interior defensive linemen? I mean, you're seeing his worst games were against the Philadelphia Eagles. Who was he matched up against? Jalen Carter. Go to the Steelers game in week 13. Up against Cameron Hayward. Titans, Jeffrey Simmons. Broncos, Zach Allen. All-Pro Zach Allen. Who had that on their bingo board?
You can't bring Alex Kappa back as you're starting right guard next year. You can't. Especially if you're paying him $10 million. You can't do that.
So did we get the dead money breakdown on what
Alex Kappa deal? I have it up here. I can just look at it, what I wrote down for last week's show, because I had it on here. So you would be looking at Alex Kappa, $8 million in savings, $2.25 in dead. So he'd be making about $10.5 million next season. To me, that's an easy decision. And I mean, like Riley says, I really, you know, we both love Matt Lee. Now, Matt Lee, almost every single snap he ever took was at center. So how much do you consider making a change of moving Karras to guard and seeing what you have with Matt Lee?
Which would be the move that I would do. If we're talking about existing pieces on the interior offensive line, I think you bring Cody Ford back as well, who kind of had an up and down 2024 season, but I think that still provides pretty good depth. He's very versatile. I think we saw him play almost every spot on the offensive line that wasn't center this year. But yeah, I mean, you are looking at turning over some of these guys, probably the two guard spots. Now, if you move Matt Lee to center you move Ted Karras to left guard or right guard. You're really only looking at drafting maybe one or two guys in the interior offensive line, because you still need depth at those positions.
Yes. And maybe the thought process is that you're going to get a savant of an offensive line coach who can fix Cordell Volson. We don't want Paul Alexander.
No. Who's the other guy that we hate?
Jim Turner. Jim Turner.
Oh, bring Jim Turner back. No, it wasn't Jim Turner's fault.
Oh god.
It wasn't his fault.
I don't know. This offensive line, though, it's gonna be really interesting what they do. I mean, you look, do they say, hey, let's take a high priced offensive lineman from the Kansas City Chiefs again this year?
Trey Smith. Wouldn't that be nice?
I don't imagine that the Chiefs I have not looked at the Chiefs cap situation to see if they can afford to pay Trey Smith. I can't imagine them letting him walk out the door, but that would be very nice. That would be very nice. I did see Rory trotting back there. Riley did see it. Rory, I think, has been on the show once.
Where is your dog?
She was just walking behind you a few minutes ago, maybe about a minute ago. Oh. She was just trotting. I think she was making a cameo. Does she have any thoughts on the offensive line?
Oh no, she's not answering.
I mean, why would she listen to you?
Because I feed her.
That is true. That is true. Now, is she more your wife or more you? Like, is she a mama's dog or a dad's dog?
It depends. It really depends on what she wants. If she wants to play, she goes to me.
Okay. Well, that's to be expected. This offense, though, as a whole, to me, how does it take the next step next year? And in my eyes, I think you'd love to get some more efficiency from the run game.
Yeah.
And I think if you get that, this offense is going to be really, 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 really freaking good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing for me is I want to see this offense close out games, which is fair. Something I don't think we really saw this year. I mean, the Chiefs game, Joe Burrow had an opportunity to close the game out where Patrick Mahomes wouldn't have gotten the ball back. And, you know, you don't have the pass interference call from Dejon Anthony, no matter how phantom that call was, which I think we both agree that call was BS. Let's see, the Commanders game, they didn't really have an opportunity to really close it out. They were really down by two scores for most of that game. The Ravens game. How many opportunities did they have in the Ravens game? They were gifted a fumble. They were gifted a terrible fumble from Lamar Jackson or the center or whoever the hell it was on that play. I can't remember. And you don't capitalize on that.
Yep.
But
at the same time, they did score 38 points. If you score 38 points, you should win.
Yeah, that's still not closing out the game, though.
I'm not disagreeing.
Chargers game was another one where you had ample opportunities and you're trusting Evan McPherson, the kicker that's, you know,
had the yips
somewhat this year, especially from beyond 50 yards. Could attempt like two or three 50-yard field goals in that game. I mean, so that's the one thing I want to see this offense do, and that's the one thing that's going to be the next step. Can you close out the games that you need to close out?
Yeah. No, I think that'd be really good and really interesting to see how that can turn up. Because, I mean, listen, the offense, like, I see so many people say, oh, well, Zach Taylor needs to give up play calling. And it's just hard for me to... Now, listen, is Zach Taylor the greatest play caller to ever walk this earth? No, of course not. But he also just coached the offense that had the most points scored in per game in franchise history, the number one pass offense in the NFL, with a dog crap offensive line.
Yeah. And...
like, it's just that I don't understand that mentality or that mindset when it and to me it's just the whole play calling thing is a lazy complaint that fans make. It's a lazy complaint. It's the same thing with like managers using bullpens in baseball. It's a lazy way to complain.
Yeah, I mean if it were apparent that we weren't getting enough out of the offense this season, I think that the argument definitely stands to be made. Hey, you've got the most expensive quarterback in the NFL who is played like an all pro or, you know, played like a top three quarterback for most of his career. And you're only say they're only putting up 20 to 24 points a game. And these guys put up, what was the average, over 30?
27.8, I think is what it was.
Okay, still the most points per game of any offense in the NFL, and they needed all those points considering how bad the defense was this season. I mean, there's really no argument to be made if your offense is putting up the numbers that they just did. And I think we've seen a lot of growth in Zach Taylor's play calling, especially over the past two seasons.
Without question. And to me, my biggest thing is when I learned that Zach Taylor really was a good play caller, was the Jake Browning situation.
Yeah.
That the offense really didn't miss a beat.
Yeah. That was what won me over with Zach Taylor. I was highly skeptical of him going up into then that. Yes, I know I was aware of the Super Bowl run, but you know, a lot of me thought that was mostly Burrow, but the play calling he had for Jake Browning, the game plans that he threw together while Joe Burrow was hurt. I mean, that he's a good play caller. Is he Kyle Shanahan? I don't know. Probably not. But he's a good play caller.
what the complaint that you can make, and I think it's fair, and I'm sure we'll probably have this show again. We did it this past year. We'll probably do it again. Is the whole thing about the slow starts. And that is fair. And I think this, like last year we did, is playing in the preseason the reason behind it. I think this year, Mick, in like July or August, we do the show of what is the reason? What is the reason? And here's Freddie writes in here and says, I think my biggest complaint with Zach is why are we in shotgun in third and one and fourth and one? You want to know why? It's this simple.
That's what Joe Burrow wants.
Joe Burrow does not like being under center. Joe Burrow does not like being under center. And guess who gets what he wants? Joe Burrow. He wants to be in the gun. The Bengals, the highest gun team in the NFL, because that's what Joe Burrow wants. He doesn't like play action because play action means he's turning his back to the defense, and that is giving him half a second less time to read the defense and make the best throw. That's Joe Burrow's superpower, and that's the reason why it is doing it. Joe seems to audible a lot, too, so we know how much the play calling is that much of an issue. Joe is seeing things from a different perspective and makes changes. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. Riley's not wrong there. You never know. You never know on some of those plays whether Burrow checked into it, he checked out of it. We don't know. I just think it's a lazy excuse for Zach Taylor to always just want to blame him for everything that it happens.
Yeah. Going back to the slow starts, I mean, it just seems like just random stuff just to happen.
I agree.
And it's really the only explanation I have is shit happens, really. I mean, so the last good start they had was 2021. I think we both agree on that. Mm-hmm. They started out 3-1, 4-1, 4-1 on the season, I think.
And then Mike White, right?
It was 4-1, and then they lost to Who did they lose to? Was it Mike White?
Packers.
No, it was Packers game. That's right.
That was the wild
Packers game.
Yes.
And then it was Ravens and then Mike White. That was the last good start the Bengals have had.
They were 3-1 and then lost to the Packers. Yep. 3-1 and then lost to the Packers. And then at the Lions, at the Ravens, at the Jets. I forgot the Jets, that was a 3-game road trip. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But that was the last good start that we had, and there just wasn't as much crap going on, right? Yeah, you had Joe Burrow coming off the ACL surgery, but largely recovered from it. No big storylines or, you know, anybody missing really much camp. Next offseason, Joe Burrow misses a ton of camp with the appendicitis, getting his appendix taken out. You saw him take a couple weeks to kind of get back to form. Calf injury in 2023. We all know the story with that. I mean, this year it was, well, your game plan was thrown out the window on Saturday because T. Higgins had a hamstring injury. You didn't know if Jamar Chase was going to play in this game. So you're trying to find a game plan with the other guys, with Mike Gesicki, with Tanner Hudson, who, again, had the fumble. You're trying to get Yoshivash involved. Like, it's just you didn't have the personnel game plan wise to really make anything happen. Week two, you're going up against the best team in the NFL.
You're taking the words out of my mouth.
Gave them a hell of a game. Week three, I guess the defense really just doesn't know, or at least this season didn't know how to handle mobile quarterbacks, because I think we can all both say their worst games defensively this year were against Lamar Jackson twice and Jaden Daniels in week three.
Yep. And then the one game against Russell Wilson.
That was god awful. I tried to,
that's probably the worst one of the season.
It is. That was Logan Wilson's first game gone.
Yeah. And then, okay. And then you beat the Panthers, and then your next game is a loss to the Ravens at home.
Yeah.
So, like, look, I get it. Like, you got to do it. And, you know, Riley says they always try to take a significantly more reserved approach the first few weeks. Like, they're trying to disguise their offense film-wise, but everyone knows what they're doing. You know, we talk a lot about that they have the so-called, like, country club offseason. The Bengals go very light, and it might start with a start slow, but the thought process is that you're playing your best football in November and December. You know the head coach who has the complete opposite mindset. We're going to kick their ass the entire time and so on. Is Marvin Lewis. Sorry, Mike Tomlin.
I knew you were going that route.
But But here's the thing. They for the most part, usually start strong. And in the last decade, they choke when it comes down to it. And that's not me saying it as a hater. That's just me talking fact. Whereas the Bengals under Zach Taylor, say what you want about Zach Taylor. His teams always, always are playing their best football in December and January. They are.
It also helps with the Steelers when they have a cupcake schedule for the first 10 weeks of the season, which they did this year. It was a pretty easy schedule.
I think there was somebody that said that this team reminded them a lot of the 2020 team. I don't know. I kept hearing the wind blowing.
Frogs.
It was just blowing in there. I don't know. It was just saying what the wind told me. Not saying what I said, but I mean, it's the fact though. Now, does Zach Taylor? He is never going to be Mike Tomlin when it comes to how intense he is. And I know we'll probably do a show on this as a whole because we're going too long right now. But does he try to sway a little bit more towards that way? And will that be the reason that the Bengals might open up 2-0 next season? I don't know. But a lot of this could be they could open up at Buffalo next year. They could go at Buffalo and then home against Baltimore week two.
Yeah.
And then, like I said,
a lot of this is shit happens. It's literally just, and unfortunately it's happened early in the season, the past three seasons.
Yep. And I don't know. And I that's where I think in like August or July, last year we did the show. I think we do it again. We go all the way into it. And then we'll actually know the schedule when it comes to that. We've gone on long enough, I think, tonight, talking about the offense. Next week, we do the same show, but it's on the defense. I think there might be one or two things we can talk about when it comes to the defense. Just like one, maybe. Trey Hendrickson was really good. That's all we need to talk about next week, right?
Yeah. Therefore, the defense was good.
Yes. Yes. Because their best player was really good. But it'll be very interesting. Very interesting. Very sensual show. We've never been called sensual before, but I'll take sensual.
My wife doesn't even call me sensual.
Why would she?
I don't know. What does sensual mean?
Give it a Google after the show. Urban Dictionary. You don't need Urban Dictionary yet. But
physically pleasing. Okay, yeah. My wife doesn't even call me physically pleasing.
Again, why would she? I don't know. Riley says, all respect to Mike Tomlin's style of coaching feels more akin to a college coach. Player's guy and role model, but it doesn't matter as much in the pros. I don't know. I've said it once, Mick. I'll say it again. Mike Tomlin is Marvin Lewis for the Super Bowl. The most overrated coach in NFL history.
He does have another Super Bowl appearance on top of that Super Bowl.
Okay.
Give him a little more credit.
We were in diapers pretty much when that happened. Not really, but we were in elementary school.
I'm in a diaper right now.
It wouldn't surprise me. Because we know how much water you drink during the show, so that's how you stop yourself from having to get up and go in the middle of the show. Next week, all defense. 2 weeks, we'll talk about T. Higgins. Break that down. All the aspects of that. Make sure you follow us on our social media channels. Join us next Wednesday at 7 o'clock Central, 8 Eastern, as we'll have the next edition of the Jungle Juice podcast. Any parting thoughts, Mick?
No. Enjoy this weekend of divisional playoff football.
Let's do it really quick. Let's do our picks. Not that people necessarily care.
I think I got one pick right this past week.
You didn't do great. Okay, we'll start it off Saturday. The early game Saturday. Texans, Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Chiefs. Yeah, Chiefs. Commanders, Lions. Lions.
Lions.
Rams, Eagles. Eagles.
Ooh. Yeah, I'll go Eagles.
Since it's in Philly, I'm taking the Eagles. And then the game of the weekend. Ravens, Bills. I know who you're taking.
Ravens.
Since it's in Buffalo, I think the Bills.
So we can't pick the same pick on every game. So you gotta go.
I'll take the Bills. I'll take the Bills.
I will say if I did not put money on the Ravens to win it all this year,
Lamar chokes at some point.
I'd be cheering for the Bills all the way.
Oh yeah, to me, best case scenario is Bills Lions. Bills Lions. That would be best case scenario. I'm not unhappy if it's Commanders. I'm not unhappy if it's Rams.
I want Texans Commanders Super Bowl.
Roger Goodell would cry. He would
battle of the previous number two overall picks Super Bowl.
Freddie's taking Ravens, Houston, Lions, Rams. Ooh, he's going with Houston to pull off the upset.
They looked pretty good last week. I mean, they didn't look bad. Their defense.
We both picked the Chargers.
Which I think it's a much different game if things in LA weren't currently going on in LA. So I think that probably had a heavy hand in that. Now, maybe it didn't because we saw the Rams absolutely take their business to the Vikings. But how long have the Rams been in Phoenix? We don't know.
Like 2 or 3 days, I think is what it was. So
yeah,
that to me was the easiest pick, was Rams over Vikings. I felt very confident in that.
So I got a quick question before we leave here.
Oh, gosh. Should I be worried?
If you're in the playoffs, and say you're a West Coast team, and most of the other playoff teams are on the East Coast, and let's say you don't have a lot of home games ahead, like, do you just keep your team permanently on the East Coast? Do you just nomad around, if you get what I'm saying, just rent out, like, facilities at colleges nearby and stuff like that?
That does happen sometimes.
Okay.
I want to say the 49ers in 19.
They did that?
I want to say that they opened up the season at Miami. I think if my memory's right. Or at the Jaguars, at the Bucks, some, and I want to say that they stayed on the East Coast and they never did go back.
Well, that was early on in the season, though. I'm talking about for the postseason.
It was. So I don't know. Maybe. I mean, the Bengals, when they were out there a week early in LA, I know that's different, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see for sure. Next week, all about the defense. We'll talk about conference championships as well next week. Maybe we'll have a defensive coordinator. I don't know. You're saying no?
I don't think we do, but
I'm going to say we do. Or at least we've got like the final like two. Like I think we've got names solidified by next week's show. So until then, follow us on all of our social media channels. Hope you have a great week. Hope you enjoy the games. Stay warm. And hooday.
Hooday. Thanks for watching.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.